Welcome back to Word of Mouth. Historian Simon Sharma calls it another example of British television's cultural necrophilia. Well then, bring out your dead. The Downton Abbey miniseries, now airing Sunday nights on PBS, has invigorated public television, revved up sales of cloche hats and maxi skirts, and has publishers scrambling to appeal to readers who devour period dramas. And what a drama it is.
How dare you threaten me?
How dare I? Oh, I assure you, I dare a great deal more than that.
I've seen shell shock before, you know.
They won't send me back.
There is a solution, and it's staring us in the face. Downton Abbey.
I think it's a ridiculous idea.
This is a house, not a hospital.
Dear Lord, I beg you to keep him safe.
Fading aristocracy, the anguish of World War I, mercenary marriage-making, malevolent ladies' maids, damaging secrets, percolating progressives, and enough good, loyal servants to ensure that everyone is dressed for dinner on time. Accuracy, it seems, may be beside the point. For those wishing for a less moth-eaten picture of the time, or counting tea times until the next episode, Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, is with us to share some suggested reading. Michael, great to have you, dear.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
We won't be able to continue that,
no,
so let's just
not,
stop
no.
it now.
That's right. Well, you know, you mentioned Simon Sharma. I mean, I think a work can be judged by the stature of its attackers, and that means Downton Abbey is doing a great job. I remember that Harold Bloom attacked Harry Potter.
Right. Okay. So they've got a good.
They're
line
doing
of
something
offense.
Right. That's right.
Well, let's fill in listeners who don't yet know Downton Abbey. I'll go through some of it. It's the name of the Yorkshire estate of the Earl of Grantham, his American-born wife, three daughters. Now his male heir goes down with the Titanic, mm-hmm. and a distant cousin becomes the next choice. Lots of backing and forthing between the distant heir and the first daughter. And the downstairs crew, we get a lot of that too, the very proper Mr. Carson, sweet maids, conspiratorial unions. What am I missing?
You've hit all the high notes, I think.
And also World War I has come. So.
Well, World War I does loom large, yes.
So, you know, the relationship, England is changing. And it is the relationship with the servants that Sharma and others find to be quite unrealistic.
Well, I think they find it veers towards soap opera, possibly. And, you know, and that's
no.
Well, and I think a lot of people, I have to confess, I'm a little late to the party. I just started watching Downton Abbey about a week ago, and I furiously flew through season one, and I also watched the premiere on the second season, which some people did complain veered a little bit more in the direction of soap opera.
I think so.
But, you know, Shakespeare is soap opera. It's all how you handle it. Not that this is Shakespeare, no. but you know, I don't mind a little bit of soap.
Especially with good period costumes and good accents.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have the goodies and the baddies. You have the intricate plots. You know, it's just fun to watch.
How about reading about any novels about service? That's one of the first things that came to me. We got a suggestion. We put this out to our Facebook listeners, of course. And Mary Russell from the Center for the Book suggested Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguro. Terrific book.
It's a terrific novel. It's set a little bit later, you know, so it's a little bit outside the period, but it certainly captures that servant relationship very much, and sort of it delves into the psychology, which is very fascinating.
Any others that you're thinking of?
Well, you know, naturally, the first thing you think of is P.G. Wodehouse with Bertie and Jeeves, mm-hmm. and you know, obviously, it's the light touch, it's the comic elements. But if you really want to, if that's the sort of there's a lot of ways into the material, and if the way that strikes you as the most entertaining is to talk about the servants and their stature, then you can't go wrong with P.G. Wodehouse. It's just hilarious stuff. In fact, half the books we're going to talk about today, I think, have already been made into PBS miniseries. You know, and that includes, you know, the P.G. Wodehouse material was immortalized by Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie. You know, just fascinating stuff, very, very funny to read.
Also, the Forsyth saga comes to mind for me because of that time period, which was also made into a terrific PBS series.
Absolutely.
And also, I think a little more accurately captured, you know, the pain, the cost of living in a great family of the time. On Facebook, Alyssa wrote to us that a friend told her about Below Stairs, the classic kitchen maid's memoir that inspired Upstairs, Downstairs, and Downton Abbey by Margaret Powell. He's
and
got a picture of it.
We happen to have a copy of the book right here. Yes.
Great minds.
Yeah. In fact, you know, publishers are working furiously right now to bring out things to press. They've already got some things from their backlist that, you know, that that fit the need. And this one already has on the cover the classic Kitchen Maid's memoir that inspired Upstairs, Downstairs, and Downton Abbey.
There you go.
And, yeah, I haven't gotten to read it yet, but certainly this is where somebody could start if you really want, you know, the real story told.
Another suggestion, Into the Silence, nonfiction set during the time period, a book that I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
there's almost too much material, Virginia. It's a fascinating period in world history, and there's almost too much material to cover.
Well, you know, it's the birth of modernism. It's World War I, the birth of the 20th century. So much is shifting. And the snobbery of the old guard, perhaps I think best embodied in the series by Maggie Smith. She's the Dowager Countess, and here she is rejoicing in a newly discovered scandal.
And now it's down to you to save Matthew from the clutches of a scheming harlot.
Really, Rosamund, there's no need to be so gleeful. You sound like Robespierre lopping off the head of Marie Antoinette.
Just as delightful as it sounds with
Maggie
clinking
Smith,
teacups.
Boy, she really makes the series, doesn't she? She's fabulous as always.
So any views, any looks inside, from the inside of a family like that?
Well, there's some serious works of biography and history. Some of them are still in print, some not. So we always encourage people to go to their local libraries to check these things out, in addition to coming to bookstores. But, for instance, one thing that struck me when I was watching Downton Abbey was some of the superficial similarities to Lord Curzon.
Who's he?
Well, he was a fellow who he was an imperial statesman, really. He was a statesman of the empire. And he married an American heiress, just as in the series. He had three daughters, just as in the series. The second was the wife of the notorious right-wing politician Oswald Mosley.
Huh.
So there's you know, if you really want to get a flavor of the period, you can go back to some of these you know, biographies. And there is a book called Curzon, Imperial Statesman, which I believe is either in a print-on-demand or out-of-print status, and that's by David Gilmore. Which we would recommend. It came out from Farrar Straus about 5 or 6 years ago.
Now, it's going to take us a little time, but we will compile a list of this and post it online at wordofmouthradio.org. Another book that was recommended, Emma Straub, a writer herself, she put three rich and snooty reads. She posted that on NPR's book list. Some of My Lives by Rosamund Bernier. It sounds like she was a bit of an early 20th century, you know, befriended Picasso, Matisse, Hockney, and Katz. So a little bit later, but a little bit of a bohemian, maybe a little bit more Lady Sybil speed, and also Great Granny Webster by Caroline Blackwood and Honor Moore. This is a young woman's relationship with her frosty and bitter great granny.
Mm-hmm.
So World War I, obviously looming large in the background here, a terrific period for literature. I'm thinking a terrific period for poets. You know, if we look at the contemporary poets of the time, the Wilfred Owen, the Rupert Brooks, Sassoon.
The story of Sassoon was, I mean, first of all, let me show you, we have a marvelous little Dover edition of World War I British Poets.
Oh.
It's like $2.50, and it has all the immortal poems of Rupert Brooke and Sassoon and Owen. You know, just the great stuff that's, it really helps to read the, if you read the poetry, to capture just the imagination of the period, the mental state of people who lived through it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a great way to, like, sort of have a doorway into it.
Any other books that you could recommend about World War I?
Well, certainly. Well, speaking of Sassoon, Pat Barker's Regeneration trilogy is a great, great read. In fact, there was actually quite a vogue for World War I books about 10 years ago. You know, you had Birdsong, you had Regeneration, then... let's see. A couple of years after that, Sebastian Barry mm-hmm. wrote a book called A Long, Long Way, which is actually a beautiful novel. It's an Irish experience of World War I, which is very different. But it also has the class conflicts and the politics, and it has a lot of the same elements that Downton Abbey also exploits.
And I'm also looking at a suggestion here, Missing of the Somme by Jeff Dyer, and The Beauty and the Sorrow, an intimate history of the First World War. I'm also looking forward to Jack Beattie, a New Hampshire author, has a new book called The Lost History of 1914 coming out next month. Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get out of time, we must look at progressive politics, because that's very much in the background here.
Sure.
Any great progressive books?
Well, you can't go wrong with Bernard Shaw. Bernard Shaw's play Heartbreak House still holds up very well today. It's not always performed. It's more often read, because I think it clocks in somewhere between 3 and 4 hours if you perform it. But Shaw's preface and the play itself are a great way of capturing just what, it's sort of like a Chekhovian look at what went wrong in England and led up to the First World War. It's got all the elements of class and snobbery and conflict and progressive politics and munitions it's a great read. Still holds up very well.
I also, couldn't help thinking of Fathers and Sons, the Turgenev book, kind of a classic. And my mother's favorite book, Middlemarch, because it's the women trying to figure out their role here, too.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. One thing to look at might be Edith Wharton's book, The Buccaneers. It's a slightly different time period, but I think it's the 1870s. Yeah. But it's about American heiresses trying to make their way in England, when society is sort of closed to them.
Oh, well, we just love it.
There's so much more. Is that the music?
Cue the music.
I didn't get to the Great War in Modern Memory. I didn't get to the Proud Tower. Sorry.
We'll put a list together, won't we, Michael?
Yeah, okay.
Well, thank you so much for going through what you have. Obviously, we could talk about this for much longer.
Absolutely.
Now, Michael Herman is the owner of the Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire. We have a link to more on the store, and we will, promise, gather up all these books and put a list together. Stay with us now for Microaggressions, the fleeting expressions of bigotry submitted by everyday people, now captured on a website. We're going to talk about that after the BBC News on Word of Mouth.